Welcome back to The Wise Man's Page, the podcast where we read Patrick Rothfuss's The Wise Man's Fear page by page. This is page 90. Brought the sudden taste of plum to my mouth. While part of me was still considering the most gracious way to respond, I found I was already speaking. I didn't set fire to your rooms, I said honestly, but I wish I had, and I wish you'd been in there when I started sleeping soundly. Hem's expression turned from scowling to astonished. "Relark, Foth," the Chancellor snapped. "You will keep a civil tongue in your head, or I will bring you up on charges of conduct unbecoming myself." The taste of plum disappeared as quickly as it had come, leaving me feeling slightly dizzy and sweating with fear and embarrassment. "My apologies, Chancellor," I said quickly, looking down at my feet. I spoke in anger. Revel is a term my people find particularly offensive. Its use makes light of the systematic slaughter of thousands of Ra. A curious line appeared between the Chancellor's eyebrows. "I admit, I don't know that particular etymology," he mused. "I guess I'll make that my question." "Hold off," Hem interrupted. "I'm not finished." "You are finished," the Chancellor said, his voice hard and firm. "You're as bad as the boy, Jasem, and with less excuse. You've shown you can't conduct yourself in a professional manner, so stint thy clep and consider yourself lucky I don't call for an official censure." Hem went white with anger, but he held his tongue. The Chancellor turned to look at me. "Master Linguist," he announced himself formally. "Relark Foth, what is the etymology of the word ravel?" "It comes from the purges instigated by Emperor Alcyon," I said. "He issued a proclamation saying any of the traveling rabble on the roads were subject to fine, imprisonment, or transportation without trial. The term became shortened to ravel, though metaplasmic enclitization, through metaplasmic enticlization." He raised an eyebrow at that. "Did it now?" I nodded. "Though I also expect there is a connection to the term ravelend, referring to the ragged appearance of performing troops that are out at the heels." The Chancellor nodded formally. "Thank you, Relark Foth. Take a seat while we confer." And that's the page. I'm Jordana.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jeremy.
Now, Jordana, you stumbled over the word through in the sentence, "the term became shortened to ravel through metaplasmic enclitization." In my book, there's no R. So you actually read it you have the same text as I do.
I read it
though
twice.
My book has a typo
and then read
and
it
says,
through
though,
the third time.
Metaplasmic enclitization.
Yeah, and looking closer at mine, yeah. it,
and through
it
is like what it should be, but in my
as
book
I was
it's
reading
also
it, a,
though, which
okay,
is a typo.
So
that
metaplasmic
not to catch.
And enclitization are both difficult words, so I was really focusing on those words, and I assumed that because I was focusing so hard on them, that I had messed up the first word, but I guess I had actually read it correctly.
You did. A metaplasm is a real thing. It's a term for any alteration in the form of a word. In particular, the addition, subtraction, or substitution of letters or sounds. It's also known as effective misspelling. It's often used in poetry for the sake of meter or rhyme. And enclitization is not a word that I find easily. I'm going to try to use a different search engine.
Sounds like a fake word, yo.
Could be, could be.
Yeah, it seems a little bit made up. So I can't find a definition of enclitization anywhere.
But it does have the benefit of being. It does have the benefit of being put next to a word that's not made up, making it seem more plausible. Like how
hello, I've actually found one. Enclitic, so a clitic that is attached to the end of another word. For example, in "Give 'em the works," the pronoun "em" is an enclitic.
Gotcha.
Which makes sense for that definition.
Specifically, the definition is it's a reduced or contracted form of a word attached to another word.
Oh. Well, so that it kind of works because ravel is shortened, but it's not attached to anything. Kind of works because ravel is a shortening of rabble, of traveling rabble, but it's not attached to anything.
Well, travel.
Yeah, but
it's rabble but that are traveling.
Rabble isn't attached to anything. Yeah.
Well, travel and rabble. It's sort of yeah, a, it's not a compound word.
It's like it's being detached. It's like not attached. If you
detached and then retached.
I'll retach you. So, Quoth is not smart to say what he says to Ham. Like, that's not the intelligent or politic thing to do. But it is the right thing to say. It is like the morally correct thing to say.
He only says it because he gets a plum flashback.
And yes, absolutely.
This is what I was talking about prior, that the plum bob exists to be a sort of deus ex machina that allows Quoth to say things he would not otherwise say at future times in the book. Whenever Rothfuss needs him to, he can say, oh, it's a plum bob flashback.
Yeah, but he doesn't need Quoth to say this. This is just like creates a fun character moment. But it also does reveal to us that Quoth would, you know, he wouldn't kill him himself, but he would like him to die in a fire, which is the correct attitude to have to someone who you hate this much. And it would make Quoth's life a lot better, and probably everyone's life a lot better if that mm-hmm. happened.
And the linguist, the chancellor, seems to come down on Quoth's side. I find it fascinating that the chancellor of the university, and perhaps the most powerful master, teaches what is maybe the most mundane of the subjects. And it's interesting to me that linguistics is up there with naming and sigildry and sympathy as one of the great chapters of arcanistry, one of the great chapters of arcanistry. Which suggests to me that language is important, you know, that mastery of language is as important as mastery of magic in this world. Perhaps.
Well, and let's not forget.
Language is the key to magic?
Well, let us not forget that Temerant is a pre-modern society, which we can safely assume means that they are a pre-literate society. Prior to, like, the 1900s, in most of the world, most people couldn't read. Right? Or like certainly couldn't read like as sophisticatedly as we take for granted that people can read now. You know, it was very common for a lot of people to just not be able to read. So in a society where not everybody can read, being able to read and write makes you like a kind of wizard. You can do things that other people can't do.
That's true. It's just that reading and writing seems to be a prerequisite for all the other subjects. So I find it interesting that it is its own section in the university with its own master.
I think that's an assumption. I don't think that reading and writing are prerequisites for all the subjects. I would argue that naming does not require reading and writing.
Fair point.
And like, I agree that Kilvin's class has a language element to it when it comes to like Tay and Doc, etc. But I do not think that that necessarily requires reading and writing.
Yeah, Kilvin is kind of like the trade school. Like, do those guys, do they have like a textbook they study from? Or is it more like hands-on learning? That being
it's
said,
more hands-on learning.
Yeah, I mean, look, I kind of agree with. I'm on the fence here because I do kind of agree with Nick that you probably couldn't get very far in the university if you weren't literate in at least one language. But I think where the linguistics school might come into play is it helps you with every other subject because we already know that, like, yeah, he has to learn sigildry and he probably has to learn like. You know, he probably has to read texts in, you know, long forgotten languages to learn the finer points of sympathy or alchemy or whatever. So I think that, you know, understanding language might help with understanding all the other subjects.
And what I'm getting at is that language is in itself a form of magic in this world, and that is perhaps not well understood, and is maybe why the Chancellor gets ousted. But I think that one of the ongoing themes that knits all the forms of magic and the book itself together is that the way a story is told influences the truth about the story, certainly in this book, and is the foundation for all the magic systems. And so it's language itself that is, you know, the foundation of naming and the foundation of sympathy and the foundation of the magic of stories. Remember that one of the sort of founding tenets of the university as we have it right now is that it's all a little bit decaying and it's all a little bit past its prime, the storied history of dueling arcanists wielding massive power. And now it's sort of mundane and just kind of a an institution where noble sons can tick a bunch of boxes and walk away feeling like they've accomplished something. It's not the storied, hallowed halls of arcanistry that, well, that stories would make it out to be. So I think that linguistics, much like naming and sympathy, have sort of fallen from the heights they once were at, which is perhaps exemplified by the existence of the Yilish knots and the fact that they seem to have a very powerful effect on the world, and yet nobody really understands them or that they work, let alone how or why they work.
That sounds good.
That's very possible. I also really like the phrase "stint thy clep."
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
great.
Shut up. Shut your yap.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were just being mean to me for a second there.
No. That's what he's saying to him. Shut your mouth.
But it's good though, right? And even without it being a familiar phrase, you know right away what it means. And Jordana has a response to it where she assumes that it's directed at her. So it's something that is very evocative and true.
Yes. And it does have it. I think part of the reason why it scans so well is because it has the same cadence as like shut your trap, because it's all three syllables.
Yeah. And of course, it's the master linguist who uses it.
Mm-hmm.
He would have the best.
Although it sounds to me like it's like a regional dialect or something, right?
It feels like
it sounds to me like it's archaic.
Yeah, exactly. But it might be both. You know how like one of those weird religious cult sects who like don't use electricity, they refer to everyone as thee and thou, and like that's kind of old fashioned. I feel like, you know, that's like he is speaking in a dialect that is a bit old fashioned. So I wonder if like that's where he's from, if they use a more, you know, outmoded way of speaking.
Or maybe he's using it for resonance.
Like,
can you elaborate?
Sound important?
Yeah, like, you know, sometimes people talk with like slightly different words to sound fancier.
Yeah, I think he's choosing his diction carefully.
It also speaks to their relationship. He refers to him by his first name, and he throws in this either very formal or very informal way of saying "shut your mouth."
Yeah.
I would say referring to someone by their first name is probably more informal.
Yeah. And then he also, I think the Chancellor is being a good teacher here, because he's admitting when he doesn't know something, and then he's giving a student a chance to teach him something.
Yeah, I like that. I appreciate that he has not stopped learning, despite the fact that he is a teacher.
Mm-hmm. And then he can admit to someone who is his social inferior when he doesn't know something.
Mm-hmm. All good things.
And I think we had speculated earlier on this podcast about what the etymology of ravel was. And I'm glad that Kvothe provides both the official etymology and a folk etymology for it.
Is the official etymology that he provides the same as our official etymology?
Well, it's not a real word.
We don't have an official etymology.
It's not a real word.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't have a racist word that is ravel in this world, right? We just have the literal meaning to ravel.
And there is a racist term for sort of the equivalent people, or like the people that the Edomara seem to be loosely based off.
Yeah.
But unclear what the etymology of it is. Actually, this might be an interesting teachable moment.
Well, do we want to do that on the air, or do we want to come to our listeners with it tomorrow?
Is it the common rabble that is the actual saying? Because there's a saying that
sounds
like that.
There's rabble. Like, rabble's a word, but it's not an offensive slur.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, in particular, I'm referring to the ethnic group, the Romani, sometimes called the, content warning, I'm going to say the slur, sometimes called gypsy people. And that word is an alteration, or perhaps a metaplasmic encletization of Egyptian, which I suppose was the supposed origin of the people in the 1600s when the term arose. But it does not have it does not have the same kind of violent origin as the term ravel, but it's still considered a slur. The Romani people do not originate in Egypt.
No, they don't. Now, before we get to today's letter, it is the end of a page, which usually means that it's the end of a chapter.
So this chapter was titled A Civil Tongue, which is used on this page when the chancellor asks Quoth to keep a civil tongue. And I assume that that title is a comment towards that the effects of the plumb.
Yeah, I think it's also how Quoth is trying to act. He's trying to be the perfect student. Throughout all of it, he's trying to give the right answers.
He is attempting to keep a civil tongue in his head throughout this whole exchange.
Mm-hmm. Except at the very end.
Yes.
So again, we've run long, and we only have the one mailbag in the pipe, so I'm going to save it for a shorter episode.
All right.
Sounds good. Well,
you might get a shorter episode on tomorrow's page.
Of the
Win! Win!